All right, so we're continuing our series in the book of Revelation. We're going to be in chapter 8 tonight, if you'd like to turn there with me, Revelation chapter 8. And just to give a quick recap of what we are seeing thus far is we saw that John the Apostle, he was in heaven, he sees the throne room of God. There is this scroll that is in the hand, the right hand of God. And there's no one that is found in heaven or on earth that is worthy or is the champion that is able to possess and take the scroll from God's hand. So there's this cry from John wanting someone to be able to open the contents of the scroll. And then finally there is this individual that is known as the Lion of the Tribe of Judah that comes and is able and is worthy to take the scroll. And then as John looks, he sees that it is actually a lamb that was slaughtered, and that we know as Jesus Christ, who is the Lion and the Lamb. And so what we saw in chapter 5 is the Lamb takes the scroll, and then in chapter 6 starts to unseal the 7 different seals of the scroll, because there are 7 total seals on the scroll for the whole scroll to be unraveled. And so within chapter 6, we see these different things start to happen on the earth. And depending on your view of eschatology, you will understand these different things that are happening differently. So if you are an idealist, right, one of the views, they would say that the things that are starting to happen in the scroll are events that are happening all the way through history that are symbolic to represent the battle between good and evil, the battle between God and the forces of darkness. So whenever they see these different seals being opened, they would describe them in specific things that happen throughout history. We then have the preterist, who whenever they see the scroll, they see this to be a judgment document for Jerusalem around the time of AD 70, where the Romans sieged the Jewish people, the people of Israel, and they took over and destroyed the temple of Jerusalem. So what they see then are these are the events that are leading up and describing what happened as AD 70, or where the temple was destroyed in AD 70. The futurist then is going to look at the seals, and they will describe them as something that is happening to consummate the return of Christ. So some of them might take it a little bit more like the idealist, where these are events that are happening throughout history and then it intensifies in the end. Or some futurists will just say there is a like 7-year period in which these events are going to happen chronologically, which results in Christ's return. So, different views on how they take it, but the seal is being undone, or the scroll is being undone, and then whenever we just finished the 6th, where there's these cosmic disturbances that it's described, right? It says the sun is not giving its light, the moon is looking like blood, and you're thinking that we're about to get the 7th seal, and all of the scroll is going to be open, and then we see in chapter 7 that instead of that happening, there's an interlude, right? It describes something that's not necessarily within the chronological order. It just says that this is something that's happening or happened before the final seal is broke. And what happens then in chapter 7 is we see a sealing of two groups, or at least a group of 144,000, which we talked a little bit last week on how there's a couple different views of who they are, primarily being either going to be some type of ethnic Jews or potentially maybe some type of spiritual Israel, which may represent maybe the church or the completeness of all Christianity. So there's some different views on that, and then it shows a great multitude that is innumerable, that is in heaven, and it describes them as the ones who have come out of the tribulation, and it describes them as all different types of tongues, tribes, nations, all these different types of people, showing how the gospel has gone to all the nations, which is the Great Commission. So we see that God is protecting and sealing certain groups of people, and there are those in heaven that are worshiping him, and that was in response answering the question of chapter 6, verse 17, which is, for the great day of his wrath has come, and who is able to stand? And that answer was, the ones able to stand against God's wrath are those who are sealed and protected by him and his grace. So we see then the groups of 144,000 are sealed. And now we're going to go right back in to the order of the seals, where we're actually going to see the seventh and final seal opened, because there was a sealing before the day of wrath has come, and now the day of wrath is coming now. So that's what we're going to be looking at in chapter 8 tonight. I'm going to read this for us, and then we'll take it bit by bit. When he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. And I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar. He was given much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. And a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. And I looked, and I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound." So that is the reading from Revelation chapter 8. And as I said, this is the seventh seal. So this is the final seal of the scroll. And now the seventh seal is opened. So all of the scroll is available to all those in heaven to be able to observe and to read it. And as we've seen through all these other seals, as soon as something happens, there immediately seems to be like a thunder, lightning, something getting destroyed, something amazing happening. And what we see in the seventh seal is something a little bit different. What we see is silence and supplication. Those are the two things that we immediately see in verses 1 to 6. It says that there was a silence in heaven. And it says that it's about 30 minutes or about half an hour. And there's some debate on whether or not this is a symbolic 30 minutes, or if it's just, symbolic 30 minutes, just meaning a short amount of time compared to the other time increments that we see in the book, or whether or not this is in a literal 30 minutes where there's this expectancy, this anticipation for what is to come. And I think the silence that we see here is actually echoing Zephaniah 1:7, because Zephaniah 1:7, what it says is to be silent in the presence of the Lord, because the day of the Lord is here, or the day of the Lord is approaching. So what this potentially then is describing is this silence is what has been prophesied throughout the Old Testament of right before the day of the Lord has come to the earth. So if that's the case, this would be describing that the day of the Lord is what is within the contents of the seventh seal. So we see there's this quiet, this silence. It's like the calm before the storm, right? That's what we're seeing here. And then it describes this angel who has this golden censer that has this incense in it. And this is describing something like what a priest would have done in the temple or in the tabernacle. And it's taking it, and it says along with the incense in this golden bowl in the golden censer is the prayers of all the saints. And then it is put on the golden altar before the throne of God, and it starts to rise up. And it basically is being received by God on the throne, which then is leading to this preparation where it says, and now God is giving seven specific angels these different trumpets that are about to sound. And as we see moving in this chapter, these trumpets are the judgment or the wrath of God that was described in chapter 6, verse 17. The wrath of God, the day of the Lord, this is all going to happen through these trumpet blasts that God has been given to his angels in response to the prayers of the saints. And I think this is just a good moment for us to think about this. God's wrath and his judgment is a response to our prayers. Now, it describes clearly the cries of the martyrs that we read earlier in a few chapters ago, how they were crying for vengeance. They were crying for God's glory to be shown, for there to be justice on the earth. But I want to just read for you just some other places throughout Scripture that we see a very similar cry for the Lord and asking, how long until you will bring this? So, how long? Psalm 42. How long will the wicked dishonor the Messiah and love what is worthless and seek lies? Psalm 6, 1-3. How long until we're healed and no longer do things that provoke God's wrath? Psalm 13, 1-2. How long will it seem like God has forgotten us and is hiding his face while the enemy exalts over us? Psalm 35, 17. How long will the Lord look on before he delivers? Psalm 62, 3. How long will the righteous be attacked? Psalm 74, 10. How long will the enemies of God scoff and revile his name? Psalm 79, 5. How long will God's anger against his people who have sinned continue? Psalm 84. How long will God refuse to answer the prayers of his people? Psalm 90, 13. How long before the Lord returns and has pity on his servants? Psalm 94, 3. How long will God allow the wicked to exult and gloat? Psalm 119, 84. How long must God's servants endure persecution? And then Revelation 6, 9, and 10. How long until God begins to avenge the blood of the martyrs? So we see this time and time again from the prophets, from the psalmists. We see it from John in the book of Revelation. We see the cry that we've been told as the church to say that we want your kingdom to come and your will to be done. That is the prayer for the church. So all of these petitions, all of these questions about how long will this be? We see the answer in chapter 8 where God says, now. This is the time where all of these prayers are being received to God on the throne, and he is now going to deal with wicked humanity. He is going to bring justice and righteousness and peace finally to the earth. And I find it interesting that we see this silence compared to the preparation for trumpets. And if you remember in an Old Testament passage of Joshua 6, we see something similar. If you notice, remember when they are traveling around the walls of Jericho, they're all told to be very quiet, right? To be silent, not to speak as they go around, right? And they do this for 7 days. And on the final day, what are they called to do? Shout and to sound the trumpets, right? And what happens then is we see that the people of God are victorious and the enemies of God are destroyed and taken over. And I think that's what this is pointing to in the New Testament that we're seeing here in chapter 8. We're seeing how there's this quiet silence of expectation, anticipation, and now we're going to see the victory of God's people and the destruction of the rebels, the ones who have resisted God. So we're then looking at these trumpet judgments tonight. And what's interesting about these trumpet judgments is you might notice that there is some parallels to the plagues of Egypt in Exodus chapter 7 to 11. So as we go through the different trumpets tonight, think about how they compare to what we see in some of the plagues that the Egyptians were experiencing whenever Moses was petitioning Pharaoh, right, and asking them to let the people go, right? We just went through this series together with Moses. So look at that and see how do these different trumpet judgments parallel to the plagues of Egypt. And one last thing before we start just taking the first four trumpets this evening is we have to think about where, when it comes to order and timeline, do these trumpets take place in regards to what we have already read thus far in the book. So there's primarily two views on the order and the chronology of these trumpets. The first one is a view known as recapitulation. Recapitulation, and that's a bigger word, but it might help you if you just look at the very beginning. It's recap. And so basically, those who take this view of the trumpets will say what is going to be going through these seven trumpet blasts is actually a recap of what we just saw throughout the six seals. So what it would basically be saying is it's recapping and it's showing it from a different perspective or a different point of view, but it's not moving the narrative forward, where there's another view, which we'll get to in a second. So what they would basically view it as is you see these, you have the seals, you have the trumpets, and then after the trumpets, some of you know there's going to be seven bowls or vials, depending on your translation. Okay, so what they would basically say is whenever we think about the timeline chronology, they would say here are the seals moving forward in time, and right along with them so these are happening right around the same time moving forward from beginning to end. Now with this view, that you could have actually different perspectives regarding the idealist or the preterist or the futurist. This isn't a view specific. So you could actually be any of these views and hold the view of recapitulation. However, it's more prominent with those who are the idealist or those who are the preterist. So the reason being, as we've mentioned about the idealist, they say a lot of this isn't supposed to be an actual, this moment is when all of this takes place. Rather, they would say this is something that continues to happen throughout history. So what they're saying is this is just a telling throughout history. And it's just giving you different ways to understand what is happening from different points of view. Whereas a preterist, as we know, this is talking about the events leading up to AD 70, they would say, don't take these as any, like, don't think four necessarily happens before one or six before two. Basically, what you look here, this is the whole event of the siege of AD 70. So they'd say, this is all just a retelling. It is not meant to be a chronological order that you have to force from the seals to the trumpets to the bowls. So that would be the view for recapitulation. Then the second view for these trumpets and seals and bowls is known as chronological progression. Now, chronological progression, as you can probably tell, it's in chronology and it's going to progress. But there is something a little bit more to it. So you have the seals, right? Seals 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. But rather than just thinking like, okay, it just keeps going like this, like this, like this, what they would say is within the seventh seal is going to be the trumpets. And then within the final trumpet is going to be the seven bowls. So it's kind of like, what are those little dolls that you can, what are the Russian dolls? Yeah, it's kind of like, it's almost like that if you can kind of picture it within the seventh of each one. So where you have the seals of seven saying this is all of the future, this is all of history, and then within the final one, which the futurist primarily will take this view, will say this is the day of the Lord, which within the day of the Lord is these intensified judgments which are moving forward chronologically within trumpets, and then within the final trumpet contains these severe bowl judgments that we'll see later within the book. So those are really the two big views on how we understand how these trumpets relate to the seals, because you might notice that there's some arguments really good for both sides, because you'll see that the trumpets and the bowls really have some overlap with what's being judged or what's just being destroyed or what's happening there. But then there's other arguments that are good that seem to say, well, this seems to describe more that didn't happen before. So there's some weight to both sides there. But hopefully you'll wrestle with that as we go through these together. And as we get to the bowls, you can keep that hopefully in your notes or in your mind as we move forward on how these things all connect when it comes to timeline and order. So the first trumpet we see in verse 7. The first trumpet, and it says, "The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown to the earth. And a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up." So what we see here is the angel sounds a trumpet, right? We see that it's finally happening, and it describes that there's hail, and that fire mingled with blood is seeming to fall down from the skies. And then it describes that it's hitting the earth, and a third of the trees are burned up, and all the green grass is burned up. So when we look at this, this has some similarities, as I said, to the plagues in Egypt. And I'll read Exodus 9, chapter 9, verse 23 to 25. "And Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail and fire darted to the ground, and the Lord rained hail on the land of Egypt." So there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, so very heavy that there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. So we see within both of these texts the description of this hail and fire striking the land, having a detriment effect to the land. So how do these different views take the first trumpet? Well, the first trumpet for the idealist, they would describe this as we see throughout history, there will be occurrences that resemble these Egyptian plagues throughout time. And with these symbolic plagues that will be affecting our world, they will typically result in destruction and loss. And in this case, we see loss of vegetation. We see the loss of trees. We see the loss of green grass. So what they would say is, as we see throughout time and throughout history, there are places that are destroyed. There are these storms, events that happen and destroy due to sin and wickedness. A preterist would say, as I noted earlier, they don't necessarily think of this to be taken as one event before the other. They would just say this is all one event, and it's describing how the Romans burned and destroyed a significant portion of Jerusalem when they invaded, which happened, as many of you would note, is many trees, a lot of the green grass was all burnt up because of the destruction and the fires and the war. So that's how a preterist would take this. Now, a futurist is going to take this more literally, of a future time where there will be actually these things like the Egyptian plagues. They'll think these are real, this is real fire, this is real hail, mixed with blood, and it's going to strike the earth, and it's going to take out a third of the vegetation in our world. So they would take, basically, if you think about all the vegetation we have in this world, a third of it will be gone from the futurist's perspective. There's one other view out there that really isn't one of those specific. You could actually hold this view and be really any of them. And it says that this is describing different types of people, where the trees are meant to describe the powerful and the wealthy, and how the grass is meant to be the common folk. So basically saying how God's judgment is going to affect a third of both groups, and how they're all going to be affected by these judgments that are occurring, whether it's throughout time, whether it's the past of AD 70, or whether it is the future tribulation period. So that would be the first trumpet that we see affecting the land. The second trumpet, we see it affecting the sea in verses 8 and 9. And it says, "Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed." So here we see another angel sound, and it looks like there's this, it's something like a great mountain that's on fire. Now imagine if this is literal, what this is going to look like, right? Think of a huge mountain flying down, all on fire, and it strikes the sea. But then within it, it says that a third of the living creatures within the sea, so the fish, these different creatures in the water, and it says a third of their ships. So think about the commerce effect as well as the ecological effect of the animals. So we see this happening, and this seems to be pretty similar, once again, to what we see in Exodus chapter 7, verses 20 and 21. And Moses and Aaron did so just as the Lord commanded. So he lifted up the rod and struck the waters that were in the river in the sight of Pharaoh, in the sight of his servants. And all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. The fish that were in the river died. The river stank, and the Egyptians could not drink the water of the river. So there was a blood throughout all the land. So what we're seeing here, and it's going to be similar to the third trumpet as well. They seem to have some connection to both here for Exodus chapter 7, 19 to 21. But we see then that there's these fish and the ships being destroyed and killed, and it's due to this something that's described as like a mountain that is covered in fire. So the idealist, they will say that what this is describing is how judgment symbolically falls on wicked nations, and it will affect both their environment, as we saw with the first trumpet, and their commerce, the second trumpet. So basically saying how over time throughout history, God's going to judge these wicked nations, how they see it with Israel, how we see it with Rome, how we saw it with Babylon, how we see it with lots of different wicked nations throughout history, and how God is going to affect their environment as well as what they make their profit on. So that's how an idealist would take that second trumpet. A preterist would say that typically in the Old Testament, nations were used symbolically, or the word mountain actually was used symbolically to represent nations. So what they think is this is describing a nation, a mountain that is falling down in flames, and it is then being scattered within the sea. Now, if some of you know, to fall would mean to be destroyed or to lose its power. And to go into the sea, a symbol for sea commonly would be to describe Gentiles or the Gentile world. So what a preterist would say is the nation of Israel is this mountain-like thing that is falling. It's on fire, and now it's going to cause the Jews to scatter throughout the Gentile world, which is what happened around that time. Those who in Israel were scattered, and they had to flee to Gentile nations, Gentile countries, because they were being burnt, and they were falling and being destroyed. So that is how a preterist would take that. And then a futurist, some of them will take it symbolically, and some will take it literally. The symbolic futurist would say that this is symbolically representing the Antichrist and or the spiritual Babylon that is coming to conquer the nations, which will include the Gentile nations. So it's hitting the sea, it's striking the sea, and it's on fire because it's coming to destroy. So it would say this is the future Antichrist that is coming to destroy the nations. Then on the literal side, they would say this is potentially some type of meteorite or asteroid that, or maybe some type of supernatural mass or object that is going to come from heaven and strike the sea. And because it's going to strike the sea, it's literally going to cause multiple fish to die like we see in Egypt, where a lot of those fish actually literally die. So you can see kind of some differences on how someone might take that second trumpet. The third trumpet, we see it striking the waters. Now, like we saw with Exodus 7, 20 to 21, likewise, we can see that it's like the Nile becoming blood, where these fish are starting to be killed and destroyed, and it also you wouldn't drink from this water because it would be gross and bitter, and that's what the word that is described of this water. It says it becomes, or the star is wormwood, and it says that the water tastes and becomes wormwood, which that was an Old Testament word that was used for bitterness, but also I think it described a plant that was poisonous and bitter at the time, in which so they understood that this would be something very bad. And so this is describing how there's this star-like thing that comes and strikes not just the sea now, but also the rivers and the clean drinking water. So now we have the oceans affected, but now we're having the clean drinking water affected. So the idealist will say that this is judgment falling on wicked nations I'm sorry, I'm reading the second trumpet. This is the world that is embracing the bitter waters of sin and idolatry, which leads to death. So basically how they would say this is, you have the sweet water that comes from Christ, right? The living water that is sweet to the taste. It's filling, it's nourishing, it's so good for you. But whenever you choose to embrace sinfulness, or you choose to reject Christ, you choose to reject him and you worship other gods, or you worship yourself, you engage in idolatry, it basically leads you to this bitter water that's going to basically kill you. Basically talking about how the wages of sin is death. They're describing how when we see these different nations that become wicked and turn from Christ, this will lead to their destruction, their downfall, and we see this throughout history. A preterist would say that this is symbolic or literal, and the symbolic view for the preterist would be that Israel has become another Egypt or Babylon. It's basically saying how Israel has done what Moses prayed they wouldn't, right? Throughout history, they basically became just what they hated, what they were freed from. They became Egypt. They became Babylon. They became idolaters. They became those who were basically accepting all these false gods. Then the literal view would say that the water became like wormwood or bitter, and if you drank it, you would be killed because of all the decaying corpses that were in the waters around the Sea of Galilee and other places because of all of the destruction and all of the killing from the wars of the Romans and the Jews. So they would say you literally couldn't drink that water around AD 70 because there were so many dead bodies in it, and it was making it so gross and terrible for your immune system. Then the futurist also has a symbolic or a literal view, where the symbolic view would say that this, once again, is the effects of the Antichrist, and saying how the Antichrist comes into the world, starts to control the nations, and starts to make it to where the waters are not clean or accessible to drink for the common person, and many people are starting to die from trying to either choose to drink it, or they die because they are not able to drink water, and so they die of thirst. Or some view it to be, as it says and describes, a star that is falling. A lot of times stars are to represent leaders or religious leaders of prominence. So some think this might be a symbolic representation of an apostate religious leader that will be in the future. Maybe like a big Billy Graham of the future that seems to like get so many people coming to the stadiums to hear him preach, and then he ends up saying basically something like, Christianity is false. Or it's all right to, all religions are the same. And basically what we see then is a mass group of people that are killed or led to spiritual death because they are led by this falling star or this apostate leader. So that's how some futurists may take that. Then a literal view, once again, for a futurist would be, this could be another meteor or a comet-like object that as it's hitting the Earth's atmosphere, it scatters. And because unlike a big asteroid that would just hit maybe one location or one part of the sea, this takes over multiple different waters and rivers to hit a third of the water supply within the world. And then because of the radiation that was with the comet or with the meteor, there is then radiation poisoning that would cause when people would drink it that they would die from it. So that would be the third trumpet views. And then the final fourth trumpet for this evening, we see the effects on the heavenly lights, the sun, the moon, the stars. And we see this in verse 12. It says, then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. So within this, we see similar to Exodus chapter 10, verses 21-23. Then the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days, but all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. So I think we see once again a parallel to one of the plagues. We see this, the plague of darkness, where it is describing how a third of the lights have been taken. And obviously in Egypt, this was a literal darkness where they couldn't even leave their homes. But it describes, as we see in chapter 7 of Revelation, how the people of God are not harmed by this. So if we are those who are on the earth at this time, we will not be affected by the darkness. We will be sealed, we will be protected, we will be able to see and have light. But for those who are in the wicked nations, they will be affected by the heavenly lights dimming. So the idealist, they would say that this represents God's control over creation and over the whole solar system throughout time, and how this is a sign of the upcoming judgment on the wicked nations, which is calling them to repent before it is complete, before all of darkness consumes them. It's supposed to warn them of the time where Christ's judgment will be complete on the earth. A preterist would say that this is the fall of the nation of Israel and then potentially the other wicked nations. How we see the sun, we see the moon, and we see stars. And maybe it's describing how Jerusalem fell, Babylon fell, Egypt fell, Rome fell after them. How this continues to happen and how these are the description of what is to come from the fall of Jerusalem. How there's continuance of these falling nations that are all wicked. And then the futurist will give a symbolic or a literal view, which the symbolic is this is a loss of spiritual light or perception. So as we get closer to the end times, there's going to be this great apostasy. And because of this, there's this great moral darkness where most people don't have discernment. They're not very good and they're not really responsive to the gospel. They just are so content in their wicked ways, their darkness, that the gospel is not being received by the majority of these people that are interacting with it. Or there's the literal view, which will say this at the end, near the end of where Christ is about to return, there's going to be a darken of the heavenly lights by a third. And this could be either a third in duration, meaning the day is shortened by a third and the evening light is shortened, or it might be by its intensity, meaning how bright the sun typically is. It's going to be a third of what we, or a third taken away of what we typically see for the light's intensity of the sun. So those are the four trumpets that we have this evening. And then if you notice, in verse 13, it describes this transition as we're about to get to the final three trumpets, and it calls them the three woes. It says in verse 13, there's this angel that basically starts flying across heaven. In some translations, it actually describes it as an eagle. So depending on your translation, your Greek translation history, background, how you're, whatever you're falling through, it describes this individual being flying through and saying, whoa, 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 for the final three judgments. And the point of that is saying that the next three trumpet blasts are going to be even worse than what was just described. So if you just think about it, especially from the futurist perspective, if you think a third of the vegetation is gone, a third of the fish is gone, a third of the ships are gone. You think about what else? You think that the clean drinking water for a third at least is gone. All of these different things, a third of the light, the heavenly lights are all gone. And now it's saying, and now the next three are even worse, right? So regardless of the view, that we see that there's going to be an intensification of these final three woes, and that's what we're going to take next week. So before we close, and I'll open it up for anyone that would like to have any questions or thoughts, because I know there's a lot there. And by the way, if you do have questions, I want to encourage you to ask them, because this is the great time to go through this as we're going through a lot of different thoughts and points. But some points of application for what can we take away from this. The first thing is prayer makes a difference. We as the church, we as Christians need to recognize the power of prayer, because all of what we just heard being described in this chapter of chapter 8 is all because of what we saw at the very beginning of the silence and of the supplication. The church, the Christians, the martyrs, they're all crying out how long? They're crying out, we want your kingdom to come. We want your will to be done. We want the Lord to save. We want the Lord to rescue us. That is the prayer of the church. And what we see here is God responds to prayers. It's just like the incense put on the altar. It will be risen up to God. And any prayer we say is brought to God like that by an angel or by Christ himself putting it on the altar. So prayer matters. Prayer makes a difference. And that's literally the imagery that we're seeing here in Revelation. How that's what's happening when you speak to the throne of God. It's like a sacrifice made to God and offered to him, and he receives it. And he will make and respond to our prayers. So prayer makes a difference. The second thing is we see Christ is coming to judge the world. Christ is going to judge. His wrath is going to come. He is going to bring justice. He's going to make all things right again. And that is a reason for the church and the Christians and all those who hear this to rejoice and to remember that even though all of this wrath is falling down on us, those in Christ are sealed and saved. We have to remember these are judgments for the wicked. These are not judgments for God's people. So we can understand that we are protected through this, just like Israel was protected in Egypt, how the Egyptians were being affected. God protected Israel. Likewise, this wrath is not meant for his people. It's meant for the wicked nations, the wicked leaders. And then the last thing that I'd like to share with you is Christ is the source of hope and joy. As we see in this, the four trumpets, we see a description of how the trees are dead and taken away. We see how the water supply is being affected and being to where it is bitter and kills people. And then last, we see how the light is being dimmed. And all of these, I think, point to how Christ is the source of joy and hope and completeness in comparison to this dying world, because Christ is the tree of life. He is the one that offers us the cross, that through the tree that he died on, we can have eternal life, eternal joy, eternal peace. Likewise, he is the source of sweet living water, that he offers it to us and that we will never become thirsty or hungry again. And then finally, he is the light of the world. Though the world may grow dark, though there might be all of this evil in the world, he is good and he brings clarity and truth, and his justice will reign forever in his kingdom. So those who are sealed and saved by him will know that they have a tree of life, they will have sweet living water, and they will have a light that will always guide the way.